Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
I'm just so happy for these players. I wanted to win this game for these players because this game was all about what they've done all year long. And I'm just so happy for our team and our players.
It does give you a special mark as well, though. 7 national championships. That's more than any coach that has ever done it, Coach Saban. Are you even able to process what that means?
Not really. I'm just happy that we won tonight. And I really haven't thought about that because you're always looking forward. And I just love this team so much and what they've been able to do. I can't even put it into words.
It is a Toyota Tuesday on the Morning Rush, coming off the national championship last night, which will be a lengthy part of the conversation this morning. Clay Henry's going to join us in his usual time at 7 o'clock. He wrote a really good piece on Arkansas needing to get the freaks, the big uglies up front. That's the guys that we saw last night for Alabama. I know Landon Dickerson had torn his ACL, but he is one of the best offensive linemen in college football. You have Alex Leatherwood, Barmore, who was tearing up the Ohio State offensive line. Those are the type of guys you need up front. Jack Lindsey's found a new school within the state of Arkansas. We'll talk about that. There's some NFL news that we want to get to this morning. Isaiah Joe had an outstanding performance for the Philadelphia 76ers yesterday. Really excited to see that and talk about him getting some playing time due to some COVID restrictions for the 76ers roster. Got some news about Arkansas baseball that I want to get to. Also some 2021 movies that are coming out that are either spinoffs or they're movies that are transitioning from others that I want to discuss. And then we also found out the best broadcaster and the best writer in Arkansas, according to the NSMA. And I want to give those guys some credit and then also talk about some of your favorite writers and favorite sports broadcasters this morning. Where do you want to start this morning?
I love this. I love this new idea you've got where I get to pick, and this truly is unrehearsed. So I truly get to pick the topic where we start the show. And as much as I'd like to probably talk about Top Gun coming out this year, I think we probably ought
which
to start.
Which looks really good, by the way.
Which looks
actually
really good.
And it's got some good supporting actors, and hopefully Cruise does a great job with that.
As much as I would love to spend some time with a movie we've never seen, let's probably start with the game most of us watched last night. That'd be the national championship, I think, is what would probably keep all of us gathered around the old radio here this morning.
Oh, well, it was really the DeVonta Smith show. My goodness gracious.
Well, for half of the game, a little over half.
Until he went out with whatever index finger
on kind of just a fluky injury, just the way that, you know, just the way the bodies came together on the attempted catch. So you wonder what kind of night statistically he could have had he been able to go the full four quarters.
And he was just unbelievable last night. And not only him, but Steve Sarkisian. And I want to go back to 2017 when Clemson is facing Alabama for the second consecutive time in the national championship. And if you remember, Lane Kiffin was booted off to FAU prior. They put Sark in that offensive coordinator role. And Jalen Hurts just did not look like he had at points that season. The offense looks discombobulated at times, and it never got what many people expected it to be. Clemson and Deshaun Watson able to win that football game. Well, Sark since then has done a fantastic job for Alabama coaching up that offense. And last night, his prowess was on full display with multiple just fantastic calls. There was a fake reverse where DeVonta acted like he was going across the board, then came back out to the left side and was just wide open. Fantastic game plan from Steve Sarkisian.
The play you're talking about with a touchdown that went to the corner fairly early in the game just put DeVonta Smith's speed on display and overshifted the defense going to their right, or to the offense's right, to the defense's left, and Smith reverses course and he's just faster than anybody. So on that particular one, he beat everyone to the front corner of the pylon to the offense's left, and they just stood no chance of getting him on that particular play. You know, just a wonderful play call there for Devontae Smith to display the speed he's got. I'm sure that had NFL scouts, GMs, coaches, owners, whoever is evaluating, drooling over what they could maybe do with him.
Yeah, he was just all over the place last night. It was disappointing that he needed to play the full game. Now, you saw at the end of the game that Leonard Dickerson, who had torn his ACL, was able to come in and at least get the snap to close it out, which was kind of a cool gesture from Nick Saban. But whether it was him, Mac Jones had a superb game last night. Najee Harris was all over the place. Mm-hmm. You had guys like Jalen Waddle, and I thought that Kurt Herbstreit and Chris Fowler did a fantastic job of talking about the buy-in from this Alabama program. Jalen Waddle is like the 11th best prospect in this upcoming NFL draft, according to like Kuiper and Todd McShay. And you could tell he was
limping,
fully healthy, hobbled, and still trying to adjust, still trying to figure out his ankle. And yet he wanted to play. He wanted to help his team win a national championship. And even though he wasn't 100%, at times he was just a decoy because it's still Jalen Waddle, one of the best wide receivers in college football.
Yeah, but it became pretty clear. I mean, he made that one run to the boundary and came up limping. It was It was pretty clear he was not ready to go, and you could tell he wasn't the Jalen Waddle that was the threat back earlier in the year.
That had three touchdowns against LSU last year. That is one of the best in college football, but hey, I'll give him credit, though, just for gutting it out. Like, that's the guy that we've seen so many players opt out to get ready for their NFL futures. And I understand that, but this guy wanted to help his team win a national championship. He wanted to be on that field with his teammates that had gotten him into this point. So give credit to where credit's due. It's like, it's kind of the same thing with Felipe Franks that we were hoping to see against TCU. We just didn't get to.
Ty, I think that's a peek behind the curtain with the culture of that program. I mean, it was referenced a couple of times, not necessarily with Waddle, but just, you know, that these guys were all about team and national title and not about agents, not about the pros. Herbstreit spoke to it. It was referenced a few times, you know, before the game with Reese Davis's coverage, and then during the game with Fowler and Herbstreit in the booth. And I think that's an example or that you can point to of that being true. If Waddle was all about the big bucks and the pros and the NFL combine and the NFL draft, he wouldn't risk himself being out there last night. But you can just see the motivation for his rehab and to be healthy enough to get on that field is clearly what's been driving him to get his body to where he could at least be on the field with his team, for his team, for that moment, for the team to win a national title. Another example last night, Devontae Smith, instead of going to the hospital to deal with that finger or to do whatever needed to be done. Hey, put that off, put it in a splint, whatever they did. I'm going to be on that sideline to celebrate with my team after the game. You know, so this is clearly a team that was all about team and national title and a lot less about, you know, big money in the pros and agents and NFL combines and drafts and all of those things that are coming up for many of these talented players.
And that's what you kind of mentioned with the peak behind the curtain. That's what Nick Saban has been able to establish, that it's a team-oriented, team first. And you saw that from several different players last night. I'm just so impressed with what Nick Saban was able to do. And our Morning Rush poll question this morning is, and this is so weird coming off the dominating performance that LSU had a season ago, but where does this Alabama team stack up when you think about the 10-game SEC slate, you think about the SEC championship, the college football playoff against Notre Dame, and then defeating Ohio State in the manner which they did. Justin Fields is probably still going to go second overall, and I know that he might not necessarily was fully healthy, but you saw at times he still has it, and he's still a fantastic football player. And Alabama, for the most part, did a really good job limiting him in the offense. And then just on the other side, their offense was unstoppable. Ohio State came into that game in a pretty decent performance relative to who they were playing in Clemson, and Alabama just had no obstacles in their way last night.
And you look at these draft boards and Kuiper's big board and all that more than I have, but boy, Devontae Smith has made himself a lot of money these last few weeks, and you're right, it's probably Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, but boy, how do you get past 3, 4, or 5 without somebody taking Devontae Smith?
A lot of people expect him to go to the Dolphins, I think 3rd pick.
want to tell you about the new Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzers. They come in spicy pineapple, cucumber lime, and peach pear. They're light and refreshing and are made with zero sugar. The new Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzers.
Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Also want to entertain Nick Saban's legacy, what that looks like now with him winning his seventh national championship, where he ranks, where he stacks up, what you feel about him, and hopefully he'll retire sometime soon, though I don't know when that is. But do want to give some shout-outs to both Steve Sullivan of KATV in Little Rock and then Andrew Hutchinson of Rivals, who we have on this program from time to time. The NSMA is National Broadcaster Association. I think it's based out of North Carolina. Dave Gorin heads it up. He's a connection of mine that I've made over the years. And they do these. They do a broadcaster and a writer every single year. And Andrew Hutchinson and Steve both won those. Were Steve for the broadcasting side, Hutch for the writing side. I wanted to give them credit this morning. And also, I think begs the question from our Morning Rush listeners at 877-377-6963. Who's your favorite television person and who's your favorite writer in the state of Arkansas? And you actually kind of have a really cool backstory with Steve Sullivan.
Well, when I was born in December 31, 1975. So when I was 5, 6, 7 years, one of Steve's first jobs in television was at channels 4029 in the River Valley, which was located just off Kelly Highway on North O, which was across the street from Fort Smith Christian School, which I went to until seventh grade. So as a young kid, kindergarten, first grade, one of the things he did, I'm sure, to make some extra money, because I'm sure being a young Cub sports reporter in those days, as it does still today, doesn't pay much. And he was doing the radio broadcast for Fort Smith Christian School, which I'm sure didn't pay much on that, but it was a little extra money. And I remember being, you know, like I said, 5, 6, 7 years old. This had to be early in the 80s, him doing these games and just being fascinated with this guy talking into this microphone and it going out on the radio. And it had what we call in the business this MARTI unit. I bet you've never even used a MARTI unit.
Couldn't tell you what that is.
Right. It's a
Jenkins might know, though.
I've used one.
You've used MARTI.
I've used one in tech before.
It's the original COMREX unit you used today, except instead of using the internet, it uses actual radio wave transmission to get back to the studio. And it's still the cleanest way to do a broadcast. So I just remember being fascinated with this and talking to him, and he actually put me on the air once to say something. And, you know, he quickly moved on to Little Rock because his talent's pretty obvious. So, you know, that goes back nearly 40 years, right at 40 years ago. But, I was fascinated with this business and with TV and radio and microphones and cords and all this stuff from an early age. And I don't know if that along with, I'm sure, several other things in, you know, sparked that interest in me. But, you know, Steve started, one of his first jobs was in the River Valley at channels 4029. And that early engagement with him is, I don't know the reason I'm sitting here today, but one of the things I do remember.
And I don't have a long-standing relationship with Steve Sullivan, but I was...
Nor do I. I just, you know...
That's a really good story.
He would never even know that story, I bet.
But I would... And that's kind of a cool connection. So to kind of tie that in with something, Carter Blackburn, who's really CBS's second play-by-play broadcaster behind Nestler, we met...
Those two games a year they get to do?
We met at a NCAA tournament basketball event, and he gave my brother and I a shout-out during a Baylor baseball game. He was on call for later, and then we reconnected in Oxford in 2015. He remembered me. So it is cool to see those connections come to fruition, and you never
I got to meet up with him. It's been 15 years ago or close to it. Someone that I worked with here was... went to school with him at Syracuse and got to know him, and he was in town to do baseball. I guess one of the regionals or super regionals, CBS Sportsnet or someone he worked for early on.
CSTV.
Whoever it was, he did the play-by-play for, and we shared a meal together. And, that, you know, this was, again, 15 years ago, but He's a good cool guy from, even though he's from Austin, Texas, pretty cool guy.
Yeah, and so, like, you never know what connections you have. Steve was sitting next to me at a basketball game. This would have been a little over a year and a half ago, and we started talking. He said, oh, by the way, I really enjoy you and Phil on Halftime. So I really appreciate that. This is a veteran in the business, not necessarily radio, but just in Arkansas sports media. So I took that to heart. Hutch and I went to college together. We've known each other for quite some time since school, and he's just an outstanding writer. When it comes to statistics, it's Hutch and Hog Stats.
Yeah, I don't know Hutch that well. We've had him on the show, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a year. He clearly does the research, puts in the spreadsheet time, however he goes about it, but very thorough and in his work and putting the numbers together.
Does a great job. And again, this got me thinking, what sports writer and television person do I enjoy the most? And my initial thoughts were probably Mike Irwin, who is just so fantastic on television. And he's always got a hot take that's real, it's authentic, and I've really enjoyed. I wish he would do more radio at times, just because that would give him an elongated period of time.
Listen, I think Mike missed his call. He's had a wonderful, decades long, 40 years or whatever, because, yeah, he started in the mid-70s at KFSM. You know, Mike's had a 40-plus year television run, but I've always thought, now radio wasn't radio today when he started, but Mike missed his call. His second career should have been radio. He missed his calling there. Mike could have been a superstar in this medium we're in today.
He could have ranted
the
more.
The best there ever was.
And then the writer side, and Hutch and I, it's fantastic. I also would say Bob Holt, the way he asked questions, the way he asked the tough questions coming off losses to coaches, to players, the questions that need to be asked that a lot of other journalists within this business, particularly in this industry in Arkansas, don't necessarily have the gall to ask. That's why I've always appreciated Bob Holt. That's why he gets the first question at SEC Media Days, during press conferences, whatever. Coaches, players, SIDs, they respect the heck out of them. But really cool to see Hutch and Sully honored for this award.
Try the new Bud Light Seltzer Lemonade. The taste of sweet lemonade meets the refreshment of a hard seltzer. Original black cherry, strawberry, and peach lemonade. The new Bud Light Seltzer Lemonade.
They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Talking about Mike Irwin a little bit earlier, he put this out yesterday. Said, good news for Arkansas baseball fans. Because it's easier to socially distance fans in Baum Walker Stadium, crowds of up to 4,000 may end up being permitted. Now, I was talking with some Morning Rush listeners yesterday who are giant Arkansas baseball fans, and I think they made some valid points. Tommy, I think there's a good chance you could see some roped or some sectioned off places within, they'll limit it to 4, 6, or 8 people within those rectangles or squares or however that's how I think the hog pen's going to work. I could be wrong about that. That's just my opinion on what it may look like.
First, they'll start with this premium seating in the skyboxes and the suites. That'll be the first place they start, and make sure all of those people that have financially supported the program, generally the longest and the deepest, get taken care of first. And then the question's going to become those that sit, I say behind the netting, they've extended the netting, but those kind of behind the home plate area that have had those seats the longest and have generally given more money, that how do you handle that? Because those are the prime seats in Baum Walker Stadium. What are you going to do with those this year? That's
a great question.
That, you know, is it going to be like basketball? Well, you're going to get every third game. You're going to get every fourth game. You're going to get one to every series. You can get Friday for this series, Saturday for the next series, Sunday for the next. That's going to be interesting. Because people get used to their seats and all of that. Then get to the hog pen and how you deal with that. I think you're right. You could rope that off. You could
That's a guess.
I think you've got a good logical approach to that. Is you mark off 8x8 squares, 6x6, however you mark that off, so that you can socially distance people and define that so that it's not just a free for all out there. And I don't know if you have a lottery system for those or what you do, because they are general admission. So you'll have some kind of ticket process that you go through to get those.
Tommy, think about how a lot of times during the game that how early people line up for the hog pen. It could be even, I mean, it could be hours before that typically is because of the lack of seating out there.
So do you do that or do you just assign it, all right, this is square number one, this is square number 51, this is however many you've got. If you've got 50 squares, you've got one through in your
district. So then you can like go and come back?
Well, that and then you just get a ticket for it and you don't have to line up hours in advance.
That makes sense.
Particularly too. In February and March where it can be raw and windy.
It's cold up in Fayetteville, Arkansas, no question about it. Talked to Eric Musselman yesterday. He shared with the Razorback media that Baby Ola can be medically cleared to return from injury in February. So you get some depth on your front line potentially. I don't know how much he's going to play. He did mention that. Justin Smith had not practiced to this point when they talked to the media yesterday, but there is some speculation that he may have practiced yesterday with the basketball team. So still waiting on him. His return is going to be massive for this team. You would love to have his presence when you take on LSU tomorrow night, when you take on Alabama this Saturday, especially with the way those two programs are playing basketball right now.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like you know, you're dwindling. Bodies are dwindling when you lose a couple of players right now. K.K. Robinson, the most recent injury that you've had. Justin Smith, still at least a couple of weeks away, it appears, from return. Any addition is a great addition at this point. So, yeah, I mean, that would be how many minutes? I would expect very limited right away. But any additional five foul, any player that could give you five fouls would be great.
Yeah. So. Dusty Hannah, some National Basketball Association news. He's been traded to the Santa Clara Warriors, which is Golden State's G League team. How fun is that going to be? Now, no, Klay Thompson is still suffering a torn Achilles, and his time coming back is he's still got a long way to go. But if ever at a point in the game, Dusty got to maybe get elevated to the starting roster and got to play alongside Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Talk about some shooters in that category.
Now, everywhere he's been, he's had a chance to at least, you know, have a 10-day contract and play up. So why would we not believe at some point he'll have a 10-day contract, either due to an injury or an opportunity that presents itself? So I think, you know, is his window closing? Is father time going to catch up? Is, you know, whatever happens here, you know, at some point, you know, they're going to find a newer, younger player to take his spot in the system. But I would fully expect him to get that 10-day opportunity because he has everywhere else.
And speaking of great shooters, Isaiah Joe has gotten to play a little more extensively with the Philadelphia 76ers because they're dealing with COVID issues. He had a fantastic game last night, a whale of a game.
Because of injury, playing with his fifth different NBA team in eight seasons. He is a pretty good shooter. There's Joe for a three, and he dropped it.
18 points, hit 4 3-pointers, also had 4 assists, 2 rebounds, and 2 steals. His best game today. It is kind of funny, Tommy. He's playing with Tyrese Maxey, who was one of Kentucky's star players for Cal last year. And it's weird to see when these guys compete against each other in college and all of a sudden they're teammates at the next level, which is exactly what he is.
I didn't watch a second. He got a start the other night. Was this off the bench or a start with these 18 points?
So I know the start was against Denver the other night.
Right.
I don't know when they played. I think
either.
It was Atlanta last night. I don't know if he got a start or not.
I guess, with 18 points. I just know he got a start the other night. I didn't know if this was his second start or kind of where he's been. But awfully proud of the guy, A, that's a Razorback, B, from my hometown, and glad to see that things are going well early on in his rookie season.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Got some news concerning Arkansas football. We were wondering where Jack Lindsey's going to end up. He's going to be a wonder boy, Tommy, like you were.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, he'll have a little better experience on campus than me.
Just a little. A
little bit as potentially a starting quarterback. So hopefully the 2021 season, A, gets played, and B, because – obviously, the 2020 season in the Great American Conference never got off the ground. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll get to a point where the 2021 – now, they just got basketball off the ground in January. So the Great American Conference is at least back to playing basketball right now. So hopefully football will see the same, and Jack Lindsey will get a chance to finish – his career there without interruption.
Other Arkansas football news, former Razorback offensive coordinator Dan Enos is the new OC and QB coach at Maryland. And the reason this is intriguing is not just because he was at Arkansas, but he's going to get to coach to his little brother, Talia.
Right.
That's he's the quarterback for Mike Locksley's team up in Maryland.
So him and Locksley obviously coached together at Alabama. Mm-hmm. That's the connection there. Dan Enos, if you lost track with him, was at Cincinnati as the running backs coach this past season. So
Cincinnati, Michigan, Alabama.
At Miami. He was at Miami and then Cincinnati. So, I mean, he has been on the move.
Popping over the place.
Hope he's been renting, not buying. If not, his real estate agents made a fortune. U-Haul's made a fortune or somebody. Penske, somebody's made a fortune off him just moving him around. His family's been troopers on the move here the last I guess he hadn't been in any place more than a year or two since leaving Arkansas. I think
it's four or five jobs in the last 4 or 5 years.
He wasn't in Arkansas really that long if you stop and think about it.
2015, 2016, so he's flying all over the place. 2017? Yeah, 2015, 2016, 2017. So 3 years, so not that long. All right, a couple other.
He hadn't been anywhere 3 years since then, I don't believe.
Yeah, a couple other headlines before we take Bruce and Mulberry's call. Bruce Feldman was reporting this during the championship last night that Bill O'Brien, former head coach of the Penn State Nittany Lions and the Houston Texans, the deal to him going to Alabama as the offensive coordinator should happen the next couple days. We know Sark's coached through last night. He's in Austin, Texas this morning or likely going to Austin, one of the two. So
I bet the Longhorn Jet was waiting on the tarmac in Miami to take him there after the game last night or first thing this morning.
He probably has not gotten much sleep, but that's looking like who's going to be the next Alabama offensive coordinator. Other NFL news, the Philadelphia Eagles fired Doug Peterson yesterday. Ian Rappaport was reporting that Doug Peterson was tired of people telling him what to do.
Well, did they tell him to tank the game? This seems to be fallout from the tank game.
That is a great question because upper management sometimes
everybody wanted to distance themselves from that turd on wheels.
And a lot of the players were mad at him, whether it's Jason Kelce, Jalen Hurts, whoever, but you wonder if that was a direct order from upper management.
Sure. I mean, exactly. You wonder who was he told to do that or did he do that on his own? And if it did, it seems like he's a sacrificial lamb in this deal. And oh, by the way, the organization ends up with the 6th pick versus the 9th pick. This thing just doesn't smell right to me for a guy who, what year were they in the Super Bowl 2 years ago?
The Patriots. That would have been in 2018.
I mean, it's unusual for a coach that's been that recently in a Super Bowl to be fired. But his whole problem comes back to what? Quarterback issues. So
it's 2018 or 2017. It's one of the two. But yeah, just
recent enough, you shouldn't be fired as a head coach.
Yep, exactly. All right, that's going to do it for our quickie headlines. Want to jump back in to the Ohio State Alabama conversation. But first, want to welcome in Bruce, who is in Mulberry, Arkansas. Bruce, you're on the Morning Rush, buddy.
This is a warning for you to get ready for something. Mr. Kraft called me yesterday, and he's got to come by and talk to me about something.
And I'll be there today to talk about that.
Oh, today? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway, I told my coworker that Tommy Kraft's coming by. We've got a new receptionist. And her question to us was, who is Tommy Kraft?
That's the normal response, yeah.
Okay. Well, now, Tommy, I want to tell you. My co-worker and I, we did you justice, son. Mm-hmm. This girl is so excited that a celebrity is coming in to see us. The next question out of her mouth was, you think I could get an autograph from him?
Well, you've built me way up beyond reality, apparently.
Hey, son, you don't know how much we built you up after that.
I think her first question was more accurate. So,
but anyway, I was thinking, you know, a guy of your stature, surely he's got a picture of yourself in there that you could autograph for her.
I think if we rummage around somewhere in the bottom of a desk drawer, we might find one with a crease in it or something.
So, Ty, I just want you to be prepared because when he comes to work tomorrow, his head is going to be so far into the clouds, you're not going to be able to handle it.
Can't contain
it. I'll hang up and listen to you.
Bruce, appreciate your call. I remember, I think my
first kind of moment like you're discussing would have been, we did a show. This was when I was doing halftime. Phil and I did the show with Tyler Wilson back in, that would have been 2018 in Whole Hog Cafe at Little Rock. And the manager asked Tyler and Phil to sign this. And it's like, Ty, sign this too. I was like, why? And I was just exactly. I was like, why? Like, that's Phil Elson. That's one of the best quarterbacks in Razorback history. Yeah. Why do you want me to blemish this piece?
Exactly.
And he's like, I want you to sign this. So, and I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to sign this. And it's funny, when I'm out with my roommates, they give me a hard time when like someone will come up to me or someone will say, oh, is this, that's friends with my roommates, and say, oh, this is the radio guy. And then they'll start talking to me and they'll get irritated and frustrated.
So when Tyler was working with us on the show on a regular basis, you know, day in, day out, I guess that's been 5 years ago, I got really, really good at figuring out how to work camera phones on the various models, whether it was the iPhone, I guess, 7 or 8 at the time, Android. I mean, I knew how to work them all.
Because all these supermodels would come up and ask to take pictures with Tyler.
Right, and I was the one that actually took the photo. You know, I was never needed in the photo, of course. I was the photographer. So I got pretty good at being a photographer.
What I'm known amongst my friend group is with the guys that are dating girls. The girlfriends like me for a number of different reasons, because I'm nice, because I'm easy to get along with, and because I take great pictures.
Yeah.
That's the portrait mode, the bending the knees a little bit, whatever I have to do. So whenever we're in a public setting or they want to take a picture with their significant other, they always say, Ty, come take this pic.
Yeah.
So like you, I have a little photography stuff in my background, which helped to get better.
So, all right. I'll be there to disappoint everyone later on today, Bruce.
Why are you going to the home of the Panthers?
You know, we got to go. We can talk to a guy about some white walls, you know, over there today.
Is it the Panthers? Is that Mole Bear's mascot?
No, they're the Yellow Jackets, aren't
Yellow
they?
Jackets. Yeah. Okay, Mole Bear Yellow Jackets. I'm trying to be better about remembering the mascots and where each town is in Arkansas, just to give to shout outs whenever we do have someone call in. Ohio State, Alabama last night. We got a chance to see one of the best college football teams in the Alabama Crimson Tide. And this was brought to my attention by a Morning Rush listener this morning. Tommy, did you know in the last 15 seasons, Arkansas has had to play 11 of the national championship winners? Think about that.
Alabama's probably the vast, vast majority of those.
Alabama, Auburn, LSU. I mean, the list is just, it keeps going and going and going. And even the years that Arkansas didn't have to play the national championship winner, they had to play either a college football playoff contestant.
Or the runner-up.
That's a great point. So that, to me, is just an unbelievable statistic that shows how competitive.
Or a couple of times both.
That's an excellent point. 2011, where he had to do that. It's hard to comprehend sometimes how difficult the Razorback schedule has been. But that statistic in itself really kind of catalogs how tough it's been for you over the years. Last 15 itself.
Well, I mean, that's, I guess, the price you pay of being in the Southeastern Conference Western Division. You know, early on, when you were, a young kid, you probably don't remember the East being the more dominant of the two divisions.
Florida and Tennessee,
Florida, Tennessee, and to some degree Georgia, but it was, no one ever thought the West was going to be able to stand up and compete with the mighty SEC East.
Can't spell citrus without UT.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you had Phil Fulmer and you had the mighty Steve Spurrier, and no one could seem to get around those guys, and particularly Florida. And when it wasn't Florida, it was Tennessee. I mean, it was just inescapable, it seemed like at times. So, but now it's Bama, and it proves to me is it's all about coaching. And you hope you've got your guy in Sam Pittman. All of these schools are searching for their Nick Saban because that's the key to this whole thing. I mean, you look at Alabama's perennial success. It's all tied to the system he's set up. It's all tied to the culture he's created. It's all tied to the discipline of the day-in, day-out tasks that he's got everybody believing, hey, if we just do this and stay nose to the grindstone the way Coach Saban, that he's got them believing because it produces results. If we do it his way every day, day in, day out, we're going to get results, and that'll be a national championship. And now he's built the monster. They just feed it. You know, they're past that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so hard. It's a perfect storm, and everybody's looking for the right coach to you know, to rebuild that type of system. And it's so difficult to create that culture. We saw it on display last night with players that were far more concerned about putting their bodies on the line for the team to win a national title, which is so rare in today's game because everyone is opting out to get themselves ready for the NFL draft, their next career, to make the money. They're worried about agents. They're worried about combines. They're worried about what's coming next. And you saw last night, Jaylen Waddle, who shouldn't have been out on that field. It was pretty clear and obvious the way he was limped and hobbled, but still got some plays in and made a small difference for his team in a game he didn't need to be out there. Clearly worked his body overtime to be to that point just to be on the field for his team. That was a risk for him that could take away from where he would be in the draft. Devontae Smith could have went on to the hospital or wherever he needed to go to get that finger looked at. He wanted to come back even though he couldn't play, be with his team, to be part of that celebration with his team. It's team over individual in that program. It's a unique culture that we don't often see in college sports.
And this will be something we'll talk with Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated, more extensively about. It's not just coming back for the national championship or the college football player for not opting out. How about coming back for senior season, getting that Heisman Trophy, doing that? Here was some of his highlights last night, had the three touchdowns, and was just all over the field.
Jones flips it to him. Devontae headed for the end zone. And Alabama back on top.
Player tonight. First and goal. Jones on the run. And it's just too easy for Devontae Smith. Play action. Jones steps up right down the middle of the field. It's touchdown. Devontae Smith cannot be stopped. A truly special performance by the Heisman Trophy winner.
I don't know what Ohio State's defensive coordinator was thinking, matching up a linebacker on the best player in college football.
He didn't. That was just a mistake.
And
he didn't do that on purpose.
Alabama runs a lot of motion, pre-snap motion, to figure out if not just the Buckeyes, but their opponents are in man or in zone. And Devontae just had his way with all these different corners, all these different linebackers, and it was a bummer that he didn't get to finish out the game. But I think that is something to be concerned with a little bit. They kept talking about his frame. He's only about 175 pounds, really skinny. We saw him get injured, and I don't think injuries have really been a part of his career. But the next level, with the physicality of the NFL, I think you should be worried about that a little bit.
Perhaps, but that injury last night was a fluke deal. I mean, that was just the way the finger was bent awkwardly in that tackle. I mean, that wasn't a injury necessary of being frail. I mean, that could have happened whether he was 195 pounds or 165 pounds.
That's fair.
That had nothing to do with the finger injury.
Take that aside. I still think it is a concern based on how small. Listen,
I agree with you, but the injury last night should not lead you to that conclusion.
Yeah, itself, but that would just. And I know as outstanding as he is, he's an incredible route runner. He works hard. You've heard him speak to just kind of being the privilege in the situation he is. He has a massive chip on his shoulder, so you know that he's going to work hard the next level. That's just something I thought of last night when they kept referring to his size and stature. What's that going to look like at the next level?
But we understand he's, 165 pounds, I think they kept saying. At 185 or 190, is he still as fast? I mean, part of the secret to his speed and his elusiveness is his stature or the weight he carries or doesn't carry. Because even though you may put on good weight, how much more good weight can you put on and maintain speed? There's a delicate balance there. I don't know what the number is. I'm sure that the more weight he's put on, and we've heard running backs here at Arkansas in the past over time talk about this. You know, the more you bulk up, the slower it brings you down. Gotcha. So, I mean, I don't know how much more good weight he can put on, you know, and maintain that breakaway speed that he has.
In regards to Devontae Smith, he's just been a fantastic player to watch this year,
and a lot of fun.
It's wild to me that go back to 2018 in the national championship against Georgia, second and 26. If you guys remember, he's the true freshman that catches the game-winning touchdown in overtime. People forget about that. He's the one that did that. And then fast forward 4 years later, he wins the Heisman Trophy and then puts on an unbelievable display, not only against the Buckeyes with three touchdowns, over 200 receiving yards last night, but throughout the majority of the season. Anytime Alabama played a big-time opponent in 2020 or in these games that we've just gotten to see, he showed up. And that's exactly what you want as a leader, as a Heisman Trophy winner, and that's why he won the award, the biggest, most prestigious award in all of college football.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
So in Clay's State of the Hog piece, there's a lot of good quality information, a lot of good opinions in there. But Clay, I thought the best part was your conversation that you had with former Razorback coach Bobby Petrino back in 2008. And the quote that stands out to me the most, it says, "You have to do two things to win, he told you. He said, "You have to hit the other team's quarterback, and you have to keep the other team from hitting your quarterback. You do those two things, and you're going to win a lot." Now, Arkansas, despite having some success this year, didn't do those two things. They allowed 34 sacks, and the defense only had 14. And you have stressed since I've gotten into sports radio how important the line of scrimmage is. They've got some recruits on campus, Clay, that you're excited about. What's the outlook look like for this 2021 season with the additions of some of what you called freaks?
Yeah, well, I think they're closer to getting the pass protection right than they are to getting the pass rush right. And the guys on campus that I think can probably impact that, the one that I saw the most promise from last year is the defensive end, Eric Gregory, redshirt freshman. And I think he had 2.5 sacks, which led the team. That's the most total sacks that they have from any player that has played the last 2 years. I shouldn't say that. McTelvin Aguim would have had a few sacks the year before. But as far as guys on the roster, they have to figure out how they can hit the quarterback more. Because it just, and you go back to game after game where the quarterback has time to go through three reads. In other words, if the first read not there, you can go the second, then the third. If they're able to do that, your secondary is not going to hold up. There's just not a secondary that can. And so you've got time to run double moves. You're going to break down in the secondary, and it's unfair. They played drop eight most of last year because they didn't think they had a defensive end that could impact the game. And I'll be interested to see in the next 2 weeks before the late signing day if they find a defensive end, either a high school player or somebody from the portal, that will impact the game as a pass rusher. We talked about the national championship game. The team that was able to hit the quarterback was Alabama last night. They won the game. That allows you to play defense and to force some turnovers, do some things to change the quarterback's eyes. Barry Odom said if the quarterback on third and eight is a little bit scared of getting hit, there's value there. And so I think what you said is right. Bobby Petrino, when he said that, I've never forgotten. I probably trotted that quote out about 10 times in the last 15 years. I know Tommy's probably seen it.
On this program you have in the last three. So. It's a good one. It has a lot of truth in it.
Yeah, and I also think one of the other good this is kind of a statistic that you listed. When it comes to getting pressure on the quarterback, I know 34 sacks given up this year is bad, but when you only get 14 sacks that your defense has, that's terrible, especially in the SEC. You brought up in 98, 88, 95, 06, 2010, those were the teams that had 40 sacks, 39 sacks, 37 sacks. The defensive lines in those teams, whether it's Jake Beckett, Jamal Anderson, those are the names I remember. Y'all are going to have to help me out with some of the other teams, the defensive linemen. But, I mean, they were some freaks up front, and they were almost virtually impossible to block, and they caused and wrecked so much havoc. Clay, you brought up last night, Mac Jones really wasn't under duress. Outside that one strip sack that he had, they blocked up well at the line of scrimmage, and that was
yeah. They're really good in the offensive line, and yeah. they had the best offensive line in college football last year. All of those guys, all the way across, are going to be first or second round draft picks, and they are freaks. When you talk about Alex Leatherwood, we didn't see Landon Dickerson except for the last two snaps, but they had the best center in college football until he got hurt against, I think it was Florida in the SEC championship game. But you have freaks in the offensive line, and the Frank Ragnow's quote that he gave me this quote last year. He says, I would ask Sam Pittman, says, what makes you such a good coach? And he says, I don't coach ball. I just find freaks. And, when you think about guys like Denver Kirkland and Sebastian Tortola and Frank Ragnow and I think Byron Cunningham is a freak, and I think he's just coming into his own, and I think you'll see him have a special season next year if he stays healthy. And, I'm anxious to see the guys that he recruited last year that they kept kind of under wraps, especially Marcus Henderson going forward. And then Takis Crawford, who transferred from Charlotte, that was in a Razorback commit several times. He decommitted after the Kentucky game last year. I don't know if y'all remember that, Ty. We may have been doing radio at that particular point.
We did make fun that day, yes. I remember that.
And he's back in the fold. Charlotte listed him as 6'5", 335, and when Richard Davenport was talking to him about his height and weight, he started laughing. He said, I'm a lot bigger than that. I'm 6'8", 345. Well, what if he's only 6'7", 340? Either way, he's a freaky guy with good feet, ability to run. He's the kind of athlete that the SEC has around the top elite teams at offensive tackle.
You need a guy like a Sean Andrews, a Jason Peters, and Arkansas's had a history of some really good offensive linemen, and with what seemingly is the best offensive line coach at college football as your head coach. And then, Clay, we hadn't talked about this Brad Davis report yet, but assuming he stays, doesn't go out to USC, you're going to have that continuity within your staff. So you're excited about a lot of potential there with your offensive line, and you're hoping that the defensive line adds another guy or two in the offseason to at least solidify which was a unit that was lacking, to say the least.
Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, the best podcast in the Natty State. Just search Hit That Line wherever you listen to podcasts.